Project. Welcome back to episode 233. Today's episode, there is way too much of my voice. Raph, unfortunately, was not able to join me on this show. I was away in active escapes on Noosa, and I interviewed Amanda Bisk, who is the trainer, or was the trainer, of the Active Escapes Noosa Retreat. She did a fantastic job. I'll tell you what, she commanded those sessions. We did an awesome variety of like handstand work, stretching, mobility, yoga, high intensity training. So not only is she an extremely knowledgeable person, but just a great trainer as well, and just an awesome person to be around. And you guys will kind of feel those vibes in this podcast. So it's always cool when we have an opportunity to sit down in person with our guests, which I was very fortunate to do. Also fortunate, we got the video version of this one in person. So Sven was with me on this trip and he videoed the whole thing. So you guys can check this out on the YouTube channel if you want to kind of put a face to all the voices. So Amanda was a former elite pole vaulter. So she pole vaulted for Australia, which is extremely cool. We talk about her gymnastics journey before that, as she started a little bit late in the game. She started at 3 years old. You know, usually you'd probably want to start probably 4 or 5 months out of the womb, but you know, she'd be later to the start. So she, you know, got going at 3 years old, and she ended up retiring at like 8 or something absurd. So we talk about that journey. We talk about her whole elite fitness journey. We talk about the negative stuff, how she ran into some serious chronic fatigue, how she had to overcome that, and sort of just the journey her life took from there. You know, struggling with her weight a little bit as a young female. And now where she is today, she's a global fitness influencer with, you know, 750,000 followers on Instagram and doing online programming and flexibility and doing some amazing things for her community and her followers, just putting out a great message. So that is what this podcast is about her story, her message, and how she's continuing to help people today. Guys, this episode was brought to you by Activated Nutrients. Now, not only does Activated Nutrients support me every single day, supports Raph every single day, but it needs to support you guys every single day. And you listen to this podcast because you obviously give a shit about your health and fitness. You obviously want your body to feel optimal. You want your baseline level of just good feels to be really high. And that is a great way to start with Activated Nutrients in the morning. So if you go to activatednutrients.com and you just search for any product that suits you, usually, most of you listening to this probably going to go for the flagship product, the top up in blue or in pink for the girls. And then if you use our code OFFERMMP when you check out, you get 20% off. But you'll get 20% off for life if you subscribe to the product. So subscribe to the product at activatednutrients.com. Feel amazing with 50 whole food vitamins and minerals every single morning. Less than a dollar a serve. It doesn't really get any better than that. If you're not doing it, you're simply just silly. Okay, and then also, guys, Beyond Macros. Now, Matt is joining us very shortly for the 1 million calorie challenge. Now, listen up. There will be more official stuff on the way, but if you guys are interested in participating in the 1 million calorie challenge, what we need is 100 listeners to do 10,000 calories in 24 hours. We are all going to plan to do it on the same day together. Everyone is going to be officially registered. You're going to get some meal suggestions and meal plans and places to eat from Matt, because he is an expert in this sort of stuff, and he'll probably even give us a recovery plan for the next day, or maybe a build-up plan for that. But guys, if we hit 1 million calories, so if over 100 subscribers manage to hit 10,000 calories, look, we'd love more, because you know, some of you might not get there, then we will donate a certain amount of money to charity, and we're going to get other fitness influencers on board as well. So we're going to do this for a good cause. It's very exciting. But if you guys are interested in nutrition coaching, if you want to find out who the man is supporting this whole challenge, then you can go to beyondmacros.com. And you can check out the nutrition coaching. All right, guys, episode 233 with Amanda Bisk. This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Mind Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode. Today, I'm without Raph, unfortunately, but I am in sunny Noosa. And for those of you who don't know what Noosa is, it was actually my childhood holiday retreat. So I've come here, I reckon it was like the 15th or 16th time this year. So we have a beautiful backdrop. We're in Noosa Crest, I believe it's called, and we're on an Active Escapes retreat. And today I'm joined by Amanda Biscuit. That's the nickname. Yeah. But Bisk is the short name, but it's actually not the full name. Are Polish, right?
Yeah, that is correct. How did you know that?
I know things. So what? How do I pronounce the full name?
So my full last name is Biskupska.
Okay.
So in Poland, there's male and female last names. So my dad's official last name is Biskupski.
Yep.
So my dad moved here 35 years ago. Nobody could spell or pronounce our last name. So he was like, okay, cool, let's change it. Yeah. So he just put Bisk. And I still have the same issue. Everyone asks me, how do you spell that? They get it wrong. I've had Brisk, Sisk. Cyst. Everything. And you're like, it's four letters. How can you get it wrong?
Yeah.
But it still happens. So I don't think it really worked for him. So yeah.
Yeah. No, it's cool. So today, you know, I thought what would be cool is we can talk a little bit about the retreat, but I'm interested more in your story, like all good little Polish immigrants. You did gymnastics, which is cool. And then you did elite pole vaulting and some other stuff as well. But why don't you just kind of take us through the start and kind of where you are today?
Okay. So my kind of the roots of everything is gymnastics. I started when I was 3 years old. My dad put me in because I was a crazy ball of energy.
Mm.
And he was like, okay, this will tire her out. She'll come home and want to go to sleep. And it actually worked the opposite. Again, one of his plans didn't work. I came home and just started swinging off the clothesline, bouncing on the couches, all that kind of stuff. But my passion for like movement and being able to just experiment with my body and being able to jump around and see what I could do all started then. I loved gymnastics. I actually got picked up at 6 years old for elite development squad at the Institute of Sport in Western Australia, where I'm from. And I was there for 2.5 years. And I think that time in my life taught me so much. Like, it taught me discipline, hard work. Like, you can go for amazing big dreams and goals. And it's continued on until today. Unfortunately for gym, I got too tall. My coaches were like, you're like 6 years old and a giant, so probably not going to be an elite gymnast. So I was devastated, but my parents were really good about it, and they let me go into like just general stream gymnastics, which I loved. And I did that until I was 18.
Okay.
During school, I was that kid. I was the kid that always got into sport. I was out there usually with the boys, because the boys were always out there playing footy or kicking a soccer ball around or whatever it would be. So I was out there. I always got involved into everything. So if there was a school team for cricket, I would do it. School team for soccer, I'd do it. School team for skipping, I'd do it. Like, so that was me.
Yeah.
And I was an only child as well. So I think it was a really great way for my parents to know that I was okay being alone as well, because obviously a lot of my friends had brothers and sisters and that kind of stuff. So it was nice for me to be able to do that, I think. Anyway, so I got to 18. And during that time, actually in high school, so my last graduating year, we had a talent identification program come through, and they actually scouted me for high jump. And I ended up becoming a high jump on the state team for a couple of years.
How did they choose that?
So they came to our school and they did like tests. So you do like a standing high jump, you like, do like a 30 meter sprint, things like that.
Right.
They kind of scouted me they saw I was quite springy, probably from all my gymnastics that I used to do. Yeah. So, got scouted for high jump, did that for a couple of years. I started to suffer a little bit with injury. So, cause I'm quite tall, like my midsection, especially lower back, suffered, and I started to get stress fractures and stuff there. That was going on. And at the same time, I was kind of like looking around the athletic stadium. I'd see these pole vaulters jumping on the other side. And I was like, oh my God, that looks so much fun. And because I was a gymnast, I was kind of missing that, you know, being able to do somersaults and get upside down. So I was like, geez, I'd love to be a pole vaulter. So obviously I spoke to my high jump coach about it, and he was like, okay, I know Alex, I'll go talk to him.
Yeah.
So he's a pole vault coach.
Okay.
And Nenad at the time, so my high jump coach, talked to him, and he was like, look, we've got this girl, she really wants to try pole vault. Alex was like, how old is she? He was like, yeah, she's about to turn 18. He was like, oh, too old. She can't.
Too old.
Yeah, too old.
Wow.
And he was kind of like, oh, but she's done gymnastics. Like, give her a go. And he was like, all right, I'll give her a go. So I went into this 2-week trial, and Alex took me on, which was amazing. And literally that build up phase of finding a sport that combined not only my gymnastics passions, but also I loved like athletics. I was also on the athletics team. To be able to combine that was like a dream come true. So I just loved, you know, I was pole vaulting probably about 6 years, I think. And just that time in my life was amazing. Just learning a new skill, really challenging myself, and I think that helped me excel. So that's when I got onto not only the state team, but also the national team. I eventually made Commonwealth Games team, World University team, got to compete overseas, wow. got paid for competitions, which was just incredible for me, for a struggling poor athlete. And yeah, it was just such a great time. Unfortunately, like my next goal was London Olympics. And within that time, so a year out from the Olympics, I actually got diagnosed with chronic fatigue. And that completely flipped my world upside down. So this person who's like grown up always doing sport, always being competitive, always being the girl that does sport. I was all of a sudden not that. And that's kind of, when my life got flipped, turned upside down and everything was just the opposite. I didn't know who I was. I had no goals. I had no direction. And it was a struggle. But looking back at it now, it was probably one of the best opportunities I ever had. So although I wasn't able to be that amazing Olympic athlete, I've turned into something else, which is kind of cool, which I never thought of, which... It's always something I tell people. It's never too late to do something you want to do. And it's also never too late to be obsessed with a new passion that you find. Like no matter how old you are, no matter how unco you are, whatever it is, like it's never too late, because I ended up turning my life around. You know, I did struggle for a couple of years. I cured myself of chronic fatigue. You can't really cure it, but you know, I got better. I would say I'm like 99% there, feeling almost.
It's a long way.
Yeah. Like, and it took me years and years, you know, so I've probably had like 5-6 years of recovery. So that's a long time.
Wow.
But yeah, so I found the fitness world. So during my years after high school, I actually was studying. I was still doing athletics. I was trying to have a social life. I was, you know, trying to hold a job as well. I needed money, all that kind of stuff. And I worked so incredibly hard on my education. I really wanted to get a university degree in sport, in fitness, whatever it was. So I ended up getting my bachelor in sports science, and then I moved on to my graduate diploma in exercise rehabilitation. And during that phase, I also did personal training coaches, athletic personal training coaches, personal training qualifications, things like that. So I really focused on like knowledge and knowing as much as I could about everything, kind of, because my background is in all sorts of sports. So I kind of wanted to know about everything. So it was lucky because I eventually went, okay, I'm going to make a career out of this. I can't become this elite athlete, but I can help other people to either be good at a sport they choose or in fitness or whatever it might be. And that's the road I chose. And I ended up personal training for a while. I was a group fitness instructor. I coached gymnastics, coached athletics. And eventually I found this thing called Instagram. I didn't actually find it. My friends did. They were all over it. And I was kind of like, oh, all right, here we go.
What year was it at this point?
I think it was 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for Instagram, pretty early days.
Yeah, it was pretty early. I still felt pretty late catching on to it because all my friends were all over it. Yeah. And I was kind of like, oh, I better get on to it.
Were they doing it as a business or as a social thing?
Okay. No. So when I started, Instagram was never a business. Like it was always just, you know, taking some funny photos with your friends or like putting on a face filter or whatever it was. That's what it was. And I don't even remember any businesses that were running at that time.
Yeah.
Never even thought it could happen.
Yeah.
So I found Instagram, and then obviously, as most of you would know, it's like evolved into this machine and like a career and a path for people, which is awesome. And I kind of fell into that path. So it was never my goal to have an online business, anything like that. Instagram was always fun for me in the beginning. It is still it now.
Yeah.
But it was just this like fun place. So yeah, I started, I guess the creative side of me, I've also been a bit of a creative most of my life. I loved art and things like that. I kind of wanted to use Instagram as a way to express myself. And that's where I started taking photos, and they were just like selfies. I'd put the self timer on the camera and do some like crazy gymnastics jumps, or I'd do like a workout routine or whatever it was. At the time, I was also getting into yoga, so I'd share a lot of the things I was learning about yoga. And then I started to notice that people were really interested in that as well. And they were kind of asking me questions. And I was like, oh my God, I'm getting like so many questions. Maybe I should do some posts that kind of answer what people are asking me.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of became this platform for me where I could share what I had learned, not only in my elite career, not only in my sports, but also my education. So everything I learned at university through my courses, I was able to share it. And I thought, wow, this is really just turned into something I did not expect, but let's roll with it. Let's see what happens. So,
how long did that take?
Oh, I would say at least a year and a half before, like, I started being like, okay, I can share some advice here and like things like that. And then after that, it took probably another year at least to start creating a business, if that makes sense. So like start to put things in place where you go, oh, we could maybe like try and make a living out of this. So yeah, 2.5 to 3 years, I reckon it started to kind of turn. Yeah.
And when did you make your first dollar on Instagram or through Instagram?
So I started in 2012, 13.
It's that moment where you're like, Mom, I have a business.
Okay. So what happened was the first 2 years of Instagram was cool. I was home in Perth. And then I started to see that you could make something out of it. And I actually was with my partner at the time, Adam, and I'm still with him.
Yeah.
But so we're running our business together. But we kind of went, okay, let's try and do something with this. And we went, let's move to Sydney. It seems to be the fitness hub of Australia. Let's try and make this happen. If it doesn't happen, we'll move back to Perth and we'll go back and do our jobs. I'll go back coaching. He'll go back and be a barista. Like that's what was going to happen. So that was in 2014.
Okay.
So 2 years later, we spent a year there. We were building content. We were trying to make money. It didn't happen. So maybe I reckon we got like one deal where it was like we contacted a company and we're like, look, give us a couple of pairs of like sports bras and crop tops and tops and we'll shoot like 100 photos for you.
Yeah.
And they probably paid us like $50 or something, you know? So it's not really anything you can live off. Both Adam and I had other jobs. We were working full time. So I'd say our real money happened when we actually decided to move back. So both Adam and I were kind of like, Sydney is full on. Let's be back around our family, around the places that we know. We just loved home. So we went back and when we went back, we were kind of like, okay, let's not go straight into jobs here. Let's see if we can make it work from Perth. So we were kind of like, all right, we're going to give ourselves 3 months. If we can start to turn things over and start to maybe get some more deals or something like that, let's see if it works. And that's what we did. And we went, okay, and it ended up working. So we started slowly, obviously Instagram at the time also started to really have that kind of business side pop out and you'd see other people trying to do it as well. So like it was never our intention to use Instagram as an income stream. It was always just fun and a passion. I mean, Adam started to learn how to do photography. That's how much we were into it. Like I just went from self-timer to, hey, let's get a better camera. Let's start, you know, doing better workout videos and like all that kind of stuff. So so I think when we moved back, it would be 2015. That's when it started to really pick up. And I mean, it's all relative. We also started to get a bigger following as well. People demanding things like, oh my God, do you have a workout program?
Yeah. Okay.
And I'd be like, oh no, I don't. Maybe I should make
one. That's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of when things were like, okay, we don't need other jobs now. We can start doing this.
So coming back to when you moved to Sydney, how much did it have the impact that you hoped for when you moved to Sydney? Because like I would agree it is definitely the fitness hub of Australia. Even though you didn't maybe make the business work in the way you wanted it to, did you get a good foundation of kind of what you needed? Did you get networking done? Did you
definitely
grow your following?
Definitely. I think I'm a bit of a different personality to some other fitness influencers. Like I know a lot of other influencers would have thrived there, like just loved it. I'm the kind of person who I'm not the biggest fan of like mingling events. Okay. You know how you go and like do events and you have to dress up and like I'm not that person. Yeah. And I prefer to kind of just be doing my own thing, being trying to be unique, trying to come up with new and interesting things. Like, and I think that's why I struggled.
Okay.
But Sydney was excellent. Like absolutely amazing because you're around other people who are into what you're doing. They get it. They like, they want to make it as well. Mm. So you kind of feed off them. You make all these amazing friends in the industry. And it was a really great place. It just showed me like, if I ever wanted to do that and to have that life, I know I could be there and do it. But for me, I wasn't 100% happy there. And that's what was important. And that's why I moved back. But it gave me skills. It gave me connections. Like I have so many people and friends that I still know from Sydney who are involved in like my business and what I'm up to. And I'm involved in theirs. It's, So it was a great experience and I would not regret it for a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So when you started to get the traction that you wanted to when you moved back to Perth, what was the path that you started to go down where the following really started picking up? Where you're like, okay, they want this kind of content. We need to do more stuff like this. And then how did you choose a business model to kind of monetize the Instagram? Like, because obviously there's lots of different ways you could do it.
Yeah.
How did you choose the path that you're on now? Or maybe was it different back then and did you change it or?
All right. So people always ask me about how did your following like go, like did it slowly creep up? Did you all of a sudden see like post something and you know, you went up 200,000 followers?
Yeah.
And for us, it was never like that. For some people it was, but actually Ashley Freeman, who is another trainer here on retreat, I remember one of her posts that she did of me, like she didn't know me at the time. She just went, oh, this girl's cool. She does like heaps of fitness stuff. And she posted me on her page. And I remember that was probably like the biggest jump that I ever saw in followers, but that was like going from 1,000 followers to maybe like 6,000.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like a huge jump, big jump, but like,
people,
not huge. So that's probably like the biggest jump I ever saw on the account. Apart from that, it's been such a gradual and slow climb followers wise. And I'd say it was the same thing, like a slow and gradual understanding of how you could begin to monetize. Like I mentioned before, it was never my intention to be like, oh my God, I got to make so much money out of this. Like wicked, I'm going to be a millionaire. It's never, and even now it's not my intention. My intention is to share as much as I know with people and really listen to what they want. So I'm one of those people who tries to write back to all the comments. I want to like ask people questions. Those people who follow me take the time to be involved in my life. I want to take the time to be involved in theirs. And that's kind of how I went, look, okay, so it's pretty much like I'm a trainer, like I'm their trainer, but I'm just not with them in person. So that's what kind of got me thinking, all right, let's start doing fitness programs. People are asking me for them. They want them. So let's do it. And we're going to put a price on it, make an awesome guide. Like the first guide I ever made, I made in Microsoft Word.
Oh, nice.
It was, just skills on point, so literally my partner Adam and I did everything. We still kind of do most of everything now. Our philosophy was like, just make it. It doesn't have to be 100% perfect, but just make it and get it out there to people. And then we can grow and change as we go. Mm. So eventually we did, you know, a second guide. Then we did a stretching guide. And then we were like, okay, where are we going to go from here? So we're really reactive to the market. That's what we try and be. And because there's only two of us involved at the moment, it's really easy to be reactive to the market because it's just two people who kind of have to get their butts into gear and let's do this. So, you know, a couple of years into it, we were kind of like, oh, like people are getting into apps. We should probably get an app happening. It was actually Adam's idea. He's like, he's probably a bit more onto the trends that are coming around.
Okay.
Whereas I'm a bit more involved into getting in with people and knowing like what they want and the vibe that they're sending off. So he was kind of like, we got to do an app. So he did like heaps of research into it. He got the things happening. And then we kind of got to the phase where we were like, cool, all right, we're making an app. We're like, okay.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how that happened. And that's where we are now. Now, yes, we've made our own products and that was always our goal. If we were to ever monetize, we wanted it to be our own business and our own production. But I mean, on the side, you do get wonderful opportunities with companies that you can work with and people that you can work with. So it's not our only income stream. We also have partnerships with, yeah, great people as well. That helps. Sponsorships and things like that. So, yeah. And that's what the business is now. It's pretty much a combination of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it seems to be the best route for all influencers, right? I guess it's just making sure that you partner with the right people.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't corrupt you and your fans and, you know, your listeners and viewers, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So right now it's Instagram, and for a lot of people, they have lots of different things, right? Because we have the podcast, but we also have Instagram. And then some people have the YouTube and they also have Instagram. But for you, it's Instagram and the app.
Yeah.
What do you think it might be in the future?
Oh, look, at the moment, our future is we want to get onto YouTube. Like,
why?
I want to be able to connect with people, and I think being able to do that on video where people can spend time to you and really understand who you are and where you're from, like, pictures can only say so much, and 1 minute videos can also only say so much, and also doing a class with me can also only just say so much. Yeah. Like, I want to be able to get onto YouTube and talk about topics that people are asking me. So my app is all about yoga and workouts at the moment. People ask me about food, they ask me about recovery, they ask me about all different things which I would love to talk about, and I just don't have a platform at the moment where I can get really in depth with it. Like, Instagram's great, we do videos and stuff there, but to be able to do YouTube is awesome. So for us, that's like a relatively new thing, whereas for a lot of other people, YouTube's like old school news. So I guess it's different for everyone. I don't really know what the future after that is. Like, at the moment, our app is our baby, and we want it to be a hub of like everything that I want to share with people. So maybe in the future, it might be more videos on there. It might be recipes on there. But it's kind of funny because we do have big goals and plans, but really Adam and I both work just like day to day, week by week. Let's listen to the people. What are we going to do? And I think that's our strength. We don't plan for a year in time and be like, we're going to be exactly here in 1 year. It's like, all right, what does everyone want this week? Let's do that. So
so with a lot of the demographic that does do your stuff at the moment, what kind of people are they? Like, are they Aussie, are they American, or they're international?
So it's women, majority, especially the people on the app, using the app. I actually think females are a little bit better at really getting into things like that. I think males need a little bit more proof sometimes. So that's the one thing I love about women. They're just like, yep, I'll try it. Let's do it. So it's women. And our biggest markets are definitely the US, Europe, so places like France, London, and Australia is of course up there because I am Australian. And then just like little satellite places, you got Sweden, Germany, so it's kind of, I'd say the big three hubs would probably be the US, Australia, and the UK.
That seems to be the market for us as well. I think it's maybe something to do with just kind of where those markets are at relative to the rest of the world. And they kind of want that sort of content, right? And if you look at the biggest influencers in the world, they're from America, they're from the UK, that sort of thing.
Exactly, that's right.
So are there people that you follow that you look to for, I know obviously doing your own thing is important to you, but people that you like their message and that you're inspired by to kind of help guide your content or give you some ideas?
I'm one of those people who, it's so funny because my Instagram feed is not overly fitnessy. Like, everything I follow is like everything else that happens in my life. It's so funny. But, you know, I love the explore page, and I'll go through and I'll find random people in there who, like, you know, some crazy yoga person or a gymnast or someone who does like extreme running or whatever it is. And it might just be something I stumble upon, and that's where I find inspiration. Yeah, it's really funny because I don't use Instagram overly to find that inspiration. I'm more of a person who, like, YouTube videos are great and just random ones. Like, I'm not even looking for a specific person. It would just be like, okay, I'm looking up this topic. What can I find? And then I get caught in this web of like learning all this stuff. I love Athlene X on YouTube. I love his way of teaching. I just love, he just gets into it, gets it done. Like, there's no bullshit with him really. He's just like, you know, I like him, and he's so knowledgeable. And that's what I really appreciate, because I feel like in the fitness industry, it's so like broad with experience and with knowledge, and it's disappointing sometimes because you just see some people out there who you know aren't qualified and they're giving out this advice that you're just like, oh, you're dealing with like people's health and bodies, like you have to be careful.
Yeah.
So it's just I try and be careful about that, and I really want to take advice and inspiration from people who are really good in their field. So that's why I kind of just like float around everywhere looking for everything. Athletes are always a huge inspiration for me, whether they're from tennis or athletics or gymnastics or whatever. Like I love Simone Biles, love Roger Federer, love, you know, Usain Bolt, whatever it is, like, you know, so.
Yeah, I was just sort of getting a gauge because, you know, a lot of, it's interesting, a lot of people that are really into sort of the space that we're into, content creation. We do follow a few people, but not as heavily as some of the audiences that listen to us or follow you, right? And it's kind of a topic that we touched on last night over some drinks, was what it's like now, this new generation coming through and absorbing our content, and kind of how they're dealing with it and how they're living almost too much in the online space. And obviously without sharing like names and details or too much, how have you found some of the, you know, maybe more less positive side of kind of the following and the audience and the people you attract? You know, the bigger you get, what we've found as well is like you do attract a lot of sort of negativity sometimes and some hate, right?
Yeah.
People say like the haters make me stronger, stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
How have you gone with such a big following, managing that kind of side of things?
Do you know what? I've been so lucky with that side of things. I don't know if it's the way that I react to people who are quite negative about what I do or whatever it is. I haven't had a lot of it, which has been great, but I've always been that person who just doesn't put up with it. Like I'm not the one who's going to sit there and keep fueling the fire.
Yeah.
So if I get a crappy comment, it might not even be to me. It might be someone who's written a comment above them or something, and they've written something real crap.
Yeah.
I'm like, see you later. You're blocked.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
And I think because I have that filter process and I don't fight back, I don't question anything, I don't engage with them, I don't really get a lot, which is awesome. But my advice for people who do get it, it's like, it's a part of life. Some people really like to voice their opinion and what they think about, but that doesn't mean they're right. So just because somebody's hating something you're doing or whatever it is, it doesn't mean they're right about that. All you can do is the best that you know, and to try and keep it as positive as possible. Don't light the fire with them. Don't sit there and argue about it. There's just no point, especially across social media and writing like messages and comments and all that kind of stuff, because you just don't know the tone everything is written in as well. Yeah, that's really important. So just get rid of it. Block them.
Yeah.
If they're not happy with what you're posting or they're abusing someone else on your page, just block them. Why do they need to be there? They don't need to be there watching your content.
Mm.
Yeah, simple as that.
If you're filtering them all the time and you're making these sort of you're getting back to comments and DMs and all that sort of stuff, how are you managing your phone time?
Look, I at patches, I think my phone time's really bad, but I actually think I'm pretty good with it sometimes as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't seen you on it that much. Yeah, not
good.
Not as much as I've expected. Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah. So, like, sometimes it does overtake your life, and that's just the world we live in right now. Like, but sometimes you just need to be strong enough to be able to go, oh, let's just leave the phone. Like, when I'm on where we're on retreat right now, I pretty much never use my phone apart from if it's for photos or boomerangs that I'll put up later. So yeah. I'll never really put them up in the moment on retreat because I want to be there with the guests. I want to be doing stuff like all that kind of thing. But you know, last night I was staying up until 12 o'clock putting up stories.
Right.
So that's when it's kind of probably not okay because then I can't get to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, so it's you're playing a game with it. Like sometimes I have excellent patches where I'm barely ever on it. I've got my life together, can post a little bit here, post a little bit there. And then sometimes it's just really bad. I wake up first thing in the morning and I write back to people that have DM'd me. And then it just, you know, I've started my day really full on, which is not a good thing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so how are you fitting in? I mean, that's like fair. It can be fairly sporadic, right? We can kind of make your own rules and your own schedule.
Yeah.
So where does training fit in for you? Because obviously as an athlete growing up, it's very regimented. You know, you've got to show up to team training this time, got to eat these meals, do this, do that.
Yeah.
How now you've got ultimate freedom, so how do you make it all work?
Yeah, so it's actually funny because a lot of people think I train like, I don't know, like 10 hours out of the day, yeah. which is not true. Like, yes, I do train every day, but that training is like, sometimes it's just a walk. I walk my dogs and that has to be my session because I've got no other time. But most of the time, look, my philosophy is always you need to make time for it and you need to make time when you know you're going to do that thing. So if you're not a morning person, don't force yourself to yeah. do morning workouts. Like for me, I used to be a morning person. I used to get up at 6, do a quick like 30 to 45 minute workout, and then I get on with my day. Whereas now, like, I like a little bit of a sleep in, and I'll work out at lunch, which I have that luxury. I understand that not everyone has that,
yeah.
but I work out about lunchtime.
Yeah.
And that's really great because I can take my dogs out to the park. I work out with them as well. So I try and, you know, be pretty efficient with what I'm doing in my life.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I fit it in. And I also love to do fun things. So usually my training works in this 3-month cycle where every 3 months I'll find like another sport or activity to do. At the moment, it's like adult gymnastics. I'm there like 2 to 3 times a week,
okay.
but that's like late at night. So, yeah. you know, it starts at 7, finishes at 9.
Oh, at the gymnasium.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it cool. starts at 7, finishes at 9, which yeah. I was never a person who liked to train at night, but because that is so fun, like
yeah.
I'll go and do it.
Make
sense. But yeah, like I'm a busy person. There's so many busy people out there. We don't have our hours and hours and hours to train. I like fast and efficient workouts. HIIT workouts are my favorite, and I don't have a bunch of equipment, so body weight stuff. And that's probably the things that you see me doing the most. I can do that at home. I can do that in the park. I also love sprinting and running. I actually haven't done it in a while, but I'm pretty sure in the next 3 months or so, I'll
yeah.
change my mind and I'll go down to the athletics track and do sprinting as well. So it's just, you need to mold and change with your life, but you also need to be strict with, hey, this is an appointment with myself. I'm going to train at 5 p.m. tonight and I'm going to do it and I'm going to love it. Like you just need to get into it and find a routine.
Mm.
And I think that's the most important thing. Yeah, but I'm not a freak. I don't work out 10 hours a
yeah.
day.
yeah.
yeah.
And so you don't have, you basically do it all yourself unless you're in another environment. Like
yeah.
you just ride it all yourself.
Yeah.
And do you pick like just based off feel? Are you like, okay, yesterday I did legs, they're a bit sore, so I'm not going to do legs today. Or do you actually have like, you know, Monday through to Saturday, I'm going to hit this
yeah.
routine this week?
So I'm lucky because I naturally think like, in a programming mind. So if I go, oh, Monday I did legs, okay, today I'm going to do weights, and then tomorrow I'm going to run because it's a bit different to weights, and then I'm going to do adult gym. So I kind of know in my brain throughout the week, I kind of take it as it comes.
Okay.
I'm never really a person that'll plan fully. I'll know when I'm doing workouts, but I just won't really know what they are until I get there, because I like to be in tune with my body, know what my body wants if I have an injury, if something's niggling me, or if I just feel like doing something. It's actually funny because if I'm just all strapped for ideas, and this is most of the time,
yeah.
I'll just do something off my app.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So you'll see me following yeah. along with myself,
yeah.
which is great.
Yeah, that's yeah. good. Chew your own food.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
That's good.
yeah.
So if you're, so when you came out of the chronic fatigue, just to go back to,
mm-hmm.
you said 5 or 6 years it took
yeah.
you to come out of it.
Yeah.
How did you, well, firstly, after knowing what you know now, what do you think got you kind of into that mode? And then how did you step your way out of it?
Okay. So like the thing that got me into chronic fatigue and
yeah.
okay, so I had a very full-on, like, obviously childhood and adolescence with being an elite athlete at such a young age. I'm also a really competitive person, and I'm actually quite an anxious person. I try not to be, but pressure on myself, that's kind of like the biggest thing. So I feel like, you know, having such a strict schedule, keeping to routine, making sure you're impressing everyone, like you want your coach to be proud of you, your parents to be proud of you, your friends to be proud of you, you know, all that stuff. And it's, at the time, it doesn't feel like a lot. You're just kind of like, oh God, okay, I can do it. But like, I think it builds up. And I think that was a factor to my illness. I don't think it was that 100%, but I had patches in my life where I literally, you know, was sleeping 4 hours in the night because I couldn't get to sleep. And I just had 100 things going on during my life. I had to go to uni. I had to do morning training. I had to go to work. I had to go visit my dad and then visit my mom because they're split up. And then I had a social life. And then, so I was just running around like nuts. And I think that eventually wore me out.
Mm.
looking back at like how I recovered from chronic fatigue, one of the things that stuck out in my mind was going to see a chiropractor, which I didn't think was going to help, but he actually realigned my spine, especially up towards my neck and thoracic, which is like a huge energy center. Found out that my adrenals were literally switched on all the time. And after visiting that chiropractor, that I saw a noticeable change, and which I never...
From the first session or from after a few sessions?
It was like after the second, which is pretty early.
Yeah.
So that was... That I also remembered. I was like, okay, why was my neck and back so out of line? I actually had a fall while I was pole vaulting and I landed on my shoulder into the box. So the box is where you put the end of the pole in while you're jumping.
Oh, you didn't land on the foam?
No, it's like metal. So I landed...
Were you at the top when you fell?
Yeah. So it's like 4.5 meters. Yeah. So 4.5 meters falling down, my shoulder landed in the box. My head was on the mat.
Oh.
So my neck was like fully like 90 degree angle.
Oh.
Yeah. It was crazy. And I remember that fall, but I had no idea it would have been responsible or not fully, again, not fully responsible for chronic fatigue, but could have had a part.
Sure.
So I don't actually know what caused it, but I think it was just a whole bunch of things working in harmony that obviously came together.
Accumulation.
And that's exactly how I cured myself. A whole bunch of things in harmony working together. So it was apart from like the chiropractor thing, I did everything else. I saw doctors, I saw specialists, I had kidney tests, I had went to the acupuncture, I did chiropractors, I did nutritionists, tried vegan, you know, all these things. And I think, and yoga, huge thing. All that came together. And I think that's what healed me, but it was consistency over time. I can't sit here and tell people, hey, go to the chiropractor, you're going to feel great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's all different for everybody. Yeah. And I believe chronic fatigue is set off by different things in different people. I don't think there's one, you know, one thing that will make you get chronic fatigue.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's just sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back, right? At the end of all that accumulation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's how people feel probably sometimes when they go on holidays, right? And they look back at their life, you know, because they're a long distance away from it. And they're like, holy shit. Like, my life is just out of control right now. What am I doing? Like, this is too much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people get really close to that line. They definitely straddle that line a lot. Knowing that now, do you think it would be almost impossible to get back to that sort of stage? Because I feel like, well, in my experience, a lot of people that have been there before can relapse quite often. That's what I've seen in my experience.
Right. Okay.
And that just may be different because, you know, obviously you're so well educated in sort of health, you understand, okay, I'm heading down this path, I know my body, I should pull back.
Yeah.
Whereas some people who do that, they may not see those early warning signs, they may fall back into it again. You said you're 99% cured. Is there just moments where you kind of feel it relapsing or you just...
Yeah, so I think with me, I just have a lot of acceptance. I'm kind of like, look, I'm probably not going to be an elite athlete again. I'm not going to be this crazy person, like, who's going to have a schedule, like, you know, back to back to back to back. I just know that and I've accepted that. So if I feel off, if I can't do something in the gym, I don't get upset about it. I'm just like, cool, not feeling legs today, feel really weak, can't do that. Let's do a bit of core.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, I don't want to work out today. Let's go for a walk. Like, I've just got that acceptance. And I think that's the really important thing about managing chronic fatigue, because like you said, it's so easy to relapse. And it is, especially now, because everything is so demanding. So it's just, you need to accept that you can't do everything and you might not be able to do things that you used to do before. And that's okay. Like, and that's fine.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of how I manage it. Like, I know those days and those triggers, they're going to make me feel bad.
Mm.
And I just don't do it.
Mm.
I just accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a good mindset. I think people, when you take it to that level and you kind of maybe narrow it down further, say like an injury, for example.
Yeah.
In my own case, it was like I had really bad knees. And then for a while, my squat was always really weak. And I was like, you know, you have to get stronger squat. You just have to do it because, you know, it's going to mean this and that and all these things, right? Life will be better if you have a stronger squat.
Yeah.
And until you accept that, you know, maybe you don't need to squat that much weight. You don't need to, you know, have that 200 kilo squat or whatever, because you can't walk. You can't walk upstairs.
Yeah.
You can't walk. Like, is it really worth it?
Yeah.
And then I think once you kind of let go of that a little bit
and
you educate yourself more, you can actually get there without having to go down the path of destroying yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of like people need to know, that there's not just one way to do things. And that's not only in your fitness and your health, it's also like in business.
Mm.
Like I've done so many things like around the corner, down the back, like not in a straight line because I don't know how to do it. So I'm just like, all right, well, this is hence the Microsoft Word first training guide. I'm like, all right, I'll just do it myself. We'll do it here. You know, there's a million different ways to do something and a million different ways to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And you just have to be creative and understand what works for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And sort of getting to, we have a segment of the show where we have like our final four questions.
Okay.
I should have given you them ahead of time. Ooh, I normally do, but...
they better not be tough.
No. They're extremely tough. Yeah, they're very difficult. Yeah, they're like elite-level gymnastics. Yeah,
I like should have studied or something.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
But before I get into those, what question do you get the most from your following?
Interesting.
Or what kind of topic?
I get two. What do you eat?
Okay.
And... what's your training routine?
Okay.
That's probably the two.
Okay. Yep. Well, we answered the training routine part.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how do you go in terms of nutrition? Now, just for anyone listening and watching this, she eats a lot of food. Okay. I can vouch for it.
I do.
She does eat a lot of food. Yeah. Okay. Don't be fooled.
And people wouldn't think. Yeah. I've always been a big eater. And people wouldn't think looking at me. And I, you know, when I was little, I got all the teasing, all the bullying. Hey, eat something. You look anorexic, blah, blah, blah. Like, obviously I've got a body type that I've been born with and I can't change that. So I am very lucky in that sense. But I mean, you know, I've had patches where I put on a bit of weight. Like, I know how it feels. Obviously, like, maybe not a lot, but like, I know.
It's all relative.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. I've had patches where I've eaten absolute crap for a long period of time and I felt crap. But yeah, like, I love food. I'm not afraid of food. I love eating. I will be honest, and I said I've been through a patch of my life where I did have trouble with it, and that was just pressure and me finding myself being a young girl. A lot of people go through it. I worked my way out of it, and now I have a very positive relationship with food, and I know that I need to because I want to feel good, especially because I've been sick as well. I've had chronic fatigue. I know how important nutrition is in that sense as well. So I love food. I'm actually, one of my other passions is animals and animal welfare, and that's something that's driven me to be vegetarian. And I try to be as vegan as I can as well. But saying that, like, if I want an ice cream, I'll have an ice cream, like things like that, it's okay. But the vegetarian thing is more of like an ethical thing for me rather than like a nutrition thing.
Yeah.
But it actually, starting off ethical, it has become like, I can get all my nutrients and feel good having a vegetarian/vegan diet. So I feel like I've kind of grown in that sense as well. But I love my carbs. I eat pasta. Hot fries are my favorite food. I love them.
Yeah.
I love my mom's cooking.
Do you eat barbecue?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. At Christmas, I will stuff my face. I'm not the one sitting there going, oh my God, I can't eat that. Like, I'll do that. But I know my balance, right? So, I'm not saying I eat crap food all the time. I actually love healthy food. I love my vegetables. And if I don't have them, like, I crave them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've taught my body, I've taught myself to love healthy food. I've got all of my go-to recipes that I can whip up in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I know that I can make a big healthy meal for myself and feel really satisfied with what I'm eating as well. So,
yeah. I think that's a good message. Yeah, I really think that people should definitely not be afraid of food.
Yeah.
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 I think it's really easy. And, you know, it's so funny. Even some of the most influential people in the fitness game, when I go out and we hang out and they eat and they still say things where I'm like, that's not true. Like, you can't just, or maybe the result they're getting is not the thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, they're getting a certain result. They might get leaner or whatever. And they're like, man, I just cut carbs and I just get leaner. It's so good. It's like, well, you actually just cut calories.
Mm,
if it was protein or if it was fat, you would still lose the weight.
Yeah.
And it's just a funny mindset that I think sometimes people, they get really stuck with. And they kind of demonize certain foods. They feel guilty. Yeah, education is the key.
It is. Yeah. And I hate when I see people like segregating food groups and just being like, oh my God, I can't eat that because I'll just get fat like straight away.
Yeah.
It's like you need to understand that food is food.
Yeah.
Your body just needs calories.
Yeah.
Whether you eat 100 grams of butter or 100 grams of watermelon. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, it's all just calories coming in. Obviously, there's nutrients and things that come into it. But like, don't be afraid. Yeah. Get knowledge up on it. Do your research. Find foods that you love. Like, just do it and find a balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give people an example, right? So going into a music festival, I thought, okay, I'm not going to eat all day. So what I'm going to do is smash 2,500 calories of McDonald's. And I did. And at the end of the day, I'd lost weight. Okay. At the end of the day, I was down a kilo. So is McDonald's going to make you fat? Not if you don't, like, if you expend more energy, you know, than how much you're putting in.
Yeah.
It's almost, it is impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also feel food is so psychological as well. Like, if you're eating food in a negative mindset and you're releasing all these negative hormones, it's actually affecting the way you're digesting that food. And hey, it could probably have an effect on how it's stored in your body.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're positive, you're happy, hey, I'm eating some fries, cool, tastes awesome, let's eat them. Tomorrow I'm going to eat a salad. Cool. When you get over it, you're not sitting there going, oh my God, I hate fries. I can't eat anything. Oh my God, I can't drink that water because I'll put on weight. Like your body is in such a different zone. So you're going to digest that food differently. You're going to store it differently. I feel like there's something, you know, going on in our bodies like that as well. Because I see so many people stressing out with what they're eating and you can't do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Like, love food.
No, that's a good message. Okay. Four questions.
Four questions. Here we go.
First, you don't have to answer them quickly.
Okay, it's not like a speed round thing. All right. Yeah. Timer.
So the first question is, if you had an opportunity to sit down and interview anyone that's alive today, who would you interview and why?
Let's see.
You can't have The Rock. You can't have Donald Trump. You can't have Elon Musk.
Oh, we already had that with...
We've thrashed them to death.
Oh, okay. Oh, gosh, it's so hard. Actually, I would probably sit down with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay.
I actually love him. He's amazing. Like, obviously, he's done so many things in his life. He's just so interesting. I've read his book and I'm just like, wow, you would have some stories to tell.
Oh, yeah.
And just like, he just gets so much done. Obviously, he's like the old school Rock, I reckon. Like, you just... they're like not human. You're just like, how do you get so much done? And then you've got so much energy. And like, he's older now. Like, he's not young. And he's still like killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He would be so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like a new speech, I want to say, floating around on YouTube. It's like Arnie at some kind of conference where he's making like a presentation. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but I'm sure if you just typed in Arnold's speech, it would come up. It's pretty recent. But... one thing from the speech that I really liked that he said, and I don't think I'd actually heard it before, which is rare, right? You often hear this stuff gets recycled a lot. But what he said was, he's like, people always say you need a plan B. And he goes, I've lived my whole life saying, I don't want a plan B.
Right.
He goes, plan B is, you're doomed to fail. He's like, because if you only have plan A, you have to make plan A work.
Yeah.
Which is like super interesting. And I sat on it and I thought about it. It's like, it's true.
Yeah.
If you're like, oh, if this doesn't work, I'll just do this.
Yeah.
If you always think, I'll just do this, I'll do this, then really your heart's not in A to go all the way.
Exactly.
Until maybe A really doesn't work and it fails, and then you've got to scrap for plan B.
Yeah.
But
you
then
don't really need a plan for that.
Not
you
really, right? But then isn't that now the new plan A if you didn't really plan for it?
Exactly.
So I think that that's really important. I think
clever when
people,
man he is.
Yeah. When people take that... that lunge a little bit, but they're like, all right, but it's okay because like I'll just keep my job on the side because that's like my plan B if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You're not really going all in.
No.
So it's probably like a...
See, I love him.
Yeah.
There's so much to absorb from him.
It just comes out of... It just oozes out of him,
man. I know.
It's just greatness.
It's in his blood.
Yeah. He's good. So second question is, what is something that you do every single day in the morning, in the evening, throughout the middle of the day that you feel like is essential to the success of your day? You would do it no matter where you are in the world.
I have my me time and that me time is usually moving my body in some sort of way, like not in an obsessive way, like, oh my God, I need to work out, but like, I just need to get out and either like go for a walk or if I'm on holiday, like let's go see something. Like I need time where I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm not stuck in this stagnant place. I need to be out doing something, whether it's doing burpees or like going for a walk or exploring something, whatever it is, like that. I need to do that every day. Even something as simple as like walking my puppies. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I just need to be out can't be confined. I think I feel really claustrophobic otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
So you could never be that person that sits on the couch and just plays video games all day.
I could do it all day.
Oh, yeah.
If I was really tired, I used to play video games quite a bit, okay. But like, I don't think I could do that continuously.
Right.
Like a day would definitely be enough, I think. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. And the third question is, it's a tough one, so I'll give you a bit of time. Has there been recently something that you have, or you believed in strongly for a long time, but recently, say in the last year or so, you changed your mind on it?
Wow, that is a toughie.
Mm.
Oh, I don't know.
I'll give you a good one.
Yeah.
We had one time, these guys on Power Athlete. I think I was telling you about them the other day. And they had been big advocates of grass-fed meat. Don't eat grain-fed meat, whatever, all this sort of stuff. But they went to a conference and this guy who basically studies the effects of plants on animals for a living. Yeah. And he like grows different types of grasses for a living and studies their effects on animals. So it's like his whole life work is eat this grass. How does it affect the biology of the animal? He came up to them. He's like, look, I've dedicated 30 years of my life to this area of research.
Yeah.
And there is nearly no difference.
Mm-hmm.
The taste is a big difference, but in terms of health consequences, how the data is there to say there is a health difference, how that actually plays out in reality, that data difference is so small that it's basically insignificant. And so really you should pick grass-fed meat or grain-fed meat based off taste as opposed to health. Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a big one.
I'm still stuck. I don't know. I can't even think.
Do you want to pull the pass card?
Yeah, let's go fast.
Pass card.
Maybe I'll come up with something in the next couple of... Yeah, next one.
So last question is sort of like a two-parter.
Yep.
The first part is like a book or books that you would recommend to people to read or something you're reading recently that you really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part is like if you have one, like a good quote that sticks with you and you.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Book, I would say, let's go, what have I read? I don't do a lot of reading. That's probably one of my my things I need to explore.
You mentioned Arnie's book, Total Recall, is that the...
Yeah. I loved that book. But I'm actually thinking I've read something I can't remember.
Fiction or non-fiction?
No, it was non-fiction. It was so... Let's go with Arnie's book.
Okay.
We'll start with that. Read that because he's actually just an incredible person and it really inspires you just to, like you said, just chase your goals and don't be afraid not to have a plan B and just like go out there and try things no matter how old you are and all that kind of stuff. And that probably merges into my quote. It's never too late to chase what you want. I see so many people, I have clients they're like, oh, I'm too old, I can't do that. Or, oh, I've never done that before in my life. I can't do that sport or whatever it is. Or, oh, I can't change my jobs. I can't do that. Like, oh, it's too late for me.
Mm.
It never is. My life has been a testament to that. Everything I've started really late in my life. And, you need to be happy and you're happy when you're chasing the things that you want to do. And if that means you're 46 and you hate your job and you want to try something else and you don't have a fallback plan, that's okay. Just go for it. You will sort it out along the way. Trust me, you will find it. And if you're chasing your passion, you can never fail. And doesn't matter what time you start changing that or if your passion changes as well. So you might be like, oh my God, I love like nutrition and I want to be a dietitian and all this stuff. And then you end up doing it and that doesn't work. And you go, okay, I actually don't want to do that. I want to, make surfboards.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, if it changes, great. Just chase it. You need to be happy in life and you need to be chasing things that you love.
Yeah. It is tough because so many people around you at certain points say that at this age, you need these things. Mm-hmm. And then at this point, you know, you need a partner and you need to be married and you need to have kids. And so with kids, you know, you need, you know, this much money in your super and you need this house and this mortgage and you need to live in this area. And it's so, I think people get so wrapped up in it and they're just absorbing it for just years and years and years. Yeah. And there's an expectation that your life has to be a certain way.
Yeah.
And it is funny. It's interesting, right? Because we go on these retreats and we're not saying people are unhappy, but, you know, they have lives that, you know, are pretty common in society,
mm-hmm.
all kinds of diverse jobs, and then we kind of stick out as sore thumbs, right? Got something really different. It's just, it's an interesting conversation, just them hearing like, oh, you do that for a living, like, what's that like? That's very interesting, you know. And I think it's just, like you said, a testament that you can, with something you really enjoy, make it work if you want it to. You just have to
hard work.
Exactly.
Don't underestimate the hard work, because it is a lot of hard work, but I think people don't mind doing hard work if it's something that you love.
Exactly. So. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Even though we passed on the third question, that's all good. We'll forgive her.
I'm sorry. I'll read more books.
It's my fault.
I swear.
Like, it's my fault. We didn't give her the questions ahead of time. We can plug them in later, maybe in the credits. But for everyone listening today, Amanda, where can they follow you, find you, tell us about the app?
So follow me on Instagram at Amanda Bisk. Find the app Fresh Body Fit Mind, or you can look up FBFM. It's in the App Store. It's on the Google Play Store. And we also have a website, www.freshbodyfitmind.com. And you'll be able to, if you join up on the app, you'll have website access and app access. That's me.
Awesome. And next Active Escapes retreat you'll be on is...
I'll be on the festival retreat. So
Bali.
If you're looking for a good time with a lot of people, up to 200 people, festival is the place to be, and that's going to be in May. So.
And she has good training. It's hard,
thanks.
But it's a lot of fun.
Good.
So it's fantastic. All right, guys, there you have it. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. All right, guys, there you have it. An incredible episode with Amanda. If you listen to this podcast and you thought, wow, that chick is super cool, I would love to hang out with her, well, you can. Active Escapes in Bali is coming up very shortly. We will be on that as well. So if you go to activeescapes.com/MOP, you can get a little bit of a discount if you want to join that Bali retreat, or if you just want to join any of the retreats in the future. But that is the kind of sick vibes that we do. We go there, we hang, we chill, we podcast, we eat, we drink a little bit, maybe sometimes a little bit too much, and then we just work out in the sun. It's an amazing trip. You guys should join us at Active Escapes on the next one. But guys, remember, today was brought to you by Activated Nutrients. Go to activatednutrients.com. Offer MMP gets you 20% off. And then also, Beyond Macros is sponsoring this show today as well. If you head to beyondmacros.com, then you guys can get a free consultation for any sort of nutrition coaching service. All right, guys, thanks so much, and we'll speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.